The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Roto-World Baseball Show. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined, as always, by my co-host, Scott Pianowski. Scott, it was a big sports weekend, NBA playoffs, NFL draft, baseball. But, you know, the biggest event is the Yahoo Friends and Family draft tonight, Monday night.
So glad you said that. Yeah, NHL playoffs also in full swing, but the Friends and Family, we are setting the bar here where it's like all these drafts in March, those are nice. But what do you need now, fantasy manager? You need a market reset, right? What do we do with Corbin Carroll? Is Ellie De La Cruz a first-round player now? You know, how do we adjust to all these pitchers and the elbow snapping and all these wins going to relievers? Well, we're going to tell you 13 people have been assembled tonight. Eric's in there. I'm in there. A lot of your favorite Roto-World and Yahoo personalities will be in there drafting, competing, side betting. And we'll have a lot to talk about later this week. I'll be writing about it. I think we'll be podcasting about it on Wednesday. Yeah. And I'm really excited. I noticed you have not, by the way, submitted your KDS, your draft slot preference.
Talk
about this quickly for a second. Do you have a pick that you want? Where would you like to pick here? Would you take Acuna first? Would you take Mookie Betts second? Or
I would still take Acuna first. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if we were doing this as like a real big money, hey, we're, you know, you got a lot on the line, like I would probably say
I'm not opposed to that, Eric.
I would probably say like give me the number one pick, or you know, I do my KDS, I want number one. I kind of am just like, I want to see what happens. I don't think that my top guys have changed much, because I was kind of in on, you know, Acuna and Bobby Witt and Mookie Betts and Kyle Tucker at the top, or near the top. I was not drafting Corbin Carroll. You know, I was not drafting starting pitching early. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the only real change would be, where am I drafting Ellie De La Cruz, based off 1 month of really good production and really good plate discipline. But for me, it was just like, I just want to, I'll see where it falls, and then I'll go from there, and I'll take it as it comes. And as Scott mentioned, we're getting DJ Short back on the podcast on Wednesday. The three of us are going to review the Yahoo Friends and Family draft. We're going to talk about the big kind of changes in value that, you know, the drafters saw after this first month. So that's going to be the primary focus of our show on Wednesday, but that will lead into a discussion of just, hey, where are we after the first month? Are there guys who, you know, the guys who came out of nowhere, you know, like the Ranger Suarez's of the world, who are like near the top of all rankings? Is this believable? Is it not? And then we'll look at the guys who were universally rostered, who are really struggling, you know, the Nick Castellanos's of the world. And it's like, when are we cutting bait? So we'll have that discussion Wednesday. Today, as always on Mondays, Scott and I are going to look back at the weekend that was. We're going to talk about some news and notes. We're going to talk about some great performances, some top waiver wire pickups of the weekend. Instead of doing drops today, I wanted to focus on guys who have had a really good start to the year but are still under-rostered. So like Wednesday, we're going to talk a lot about these guys that, like, you know, had really good starts to the year And have been picked up everywhere, like your Bryce Terangs, your Jordan Westbergs, guys like that. There are still a lot of guys who have had really good first months who are under 50% rostered on Yahoo, under 40%. And I wanted to kind of lump those guys into the waiver wire episode because I think they can still be found on wires in a fair number of leagues. And I wanted us to kind of chat about those guys as we get into it. I do want to lead this off with one of the guys who most people were saying, hey, it's a month and you've been terrible, and should I drop him or not? And now that question is off the table because Nolan Jones got put on the IL with a back injury. And so that was something that the Rockies claimed that he was playing through. And so I guess it was something he was dealing with before. It had tightened up on him a couple of times. And I guess the report, is that he's going to be placed on the IL. He has not officially been placed on the IL. So I will rephrase that, but it appears as though the Rockies plan to place Nolan Jones on the IL with a back injury as it continues to lock up on him. This might save people from a roster decision because they can place him on the IL, but was Nolan Jones somebody you were beginning to get really worried about?
Thankfully, I only have one share of Jones, but it's been frustrating. It's in a league that's deep enough that I didn't really have any alternatives but to keep running him out. We talked before the season about how depressing this Colorado lineup is, and a couple of guys have been performing, but for the most part, it's been one of the worst offenses. And of course, for whatever you get from Colorado, then they go on the road and their swing timing is all messed up, and Colorado offense, you love your pitchers facing the Rockies on the road. Mm-hmm. The cheeriest spots you can get in the National League. So, yeah, I was worried about Jones. The big talking point to him before the season was that hit rate was absurdly high, right? His BABIP was like over 400, I want to say, something like that. And we know that stuff doesn't repeat, even in Colorado with all the acreage and the thin air and all that. That was never going to happen. So thankfully, I'm underweight on Jones. I do have the share. It's on a team. You know, Eric, if I'm going to batch bad luck or underperformance, I like it to be on one team. Team has had a lot of things go wrong. Jones, I will take the hit for that. That was just a bad pick by me. But let's lump, let that team have all the potholes and all the red ink, and then hopefully run a little pure in some of my other leagues. We were talking before we started the show. We're all in a lot of leagues, right? And the joke is the father and the mother who have kids, and they have their second child, and the father goes, "Great, I can start playing favorites."
Yeah,
I know I'm not supposed to say this. We're supposed to compete as hard as we can in every league, right? I can't help it. The teams I'm near the top in, I've never won tout wars. I've come in second a few times. I have a chance to win NL tout this year. It's a very close race with, like, I think 6 or 7 teams right now are just separated by a few points. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the first places I'm looking because I'm excited by that team. I'm a human being.
That's only natural. Now, you will go through and, like, make sure that you're doing your bids on other leagues. And I get it. I do think it is a nature of, like, for some people, what is the league that's means the most to me in terms of, like, what would matter the most if I win it? And for some people, that is like a home league I've been in for 20 years. I really want to win it. And for some people, it's this gets me the most money. I really want to win it. And it's only natural that you side one way or another. And it's just making sure that siding one way or another doesn't mean you don't pay attention to the other leagues. It just means maybe they're the leagues you get in before the deadline. It just so happens for me, like, tout is where I do my waivers first because it has an 8 p.m. waiver deadline on Sundays, whereas the NFBC leagues are 10 p.m. Yahoo leagues are overnight. So I'm able to just say, okay, I'm going to get Tout Wars done first. And also, I'm doing well in Tout Wars right now. And so I want to remain competitive after my first year there was not ideal.
I want to mention about waivers really quick. You talked about the 8 o'clock Tout Wars deadline. NFBC is 10. My Sunday is my home league is at 6 for Fab, Touts at 8, NFBC, which for me is just TGFBI because I can't play for any money in Michigan for some reason. God knows why, but that's at 10 o'clock for me. Labor's at midnight. And then we have a couple of my leagues, including the Friends and Family League. One change we made this year is we're going to twice a week Fab bidding. We're not going to have any more first come, first serve, be tethered to your phone 24/7 for all the closer changes. No, we got away with that. So that's in the overnight. So one thing I want, this is pretty obvious, but I want to point this out. If you have any kind of a fantasy life like Eric does, like I do, you're in multiple leagues, there's different cadences to your fab. You want to learn. Now, every league's different. Every league has a different personality and, you know, pickup habits and all that. But you want to learn from the early fab and apply it to the later fab and have it in players you've overlooked, what the market has done. And again, you were talking about different pools of players, so it's not apples to apples, but just take that information. It's like you're playing poker. You know, you get your hole cards, you make decisions, and you see the flop and you make decisions, and then the turn comes and you make another decision, or the hitting count, you know, the difference between 1-0 and 1-1, 1-2 and 2-1 and all that stuff. It changes all the math. I want you to, if you have a similar Sunday setup the way we do, just make sure you're and also audit who's dropped, or audit if your league shows everybody who was bid on, notice the players who fetched bids who didn't go on rosters, because maybe they're the players you're going to be bidding on tomorrow. Or if there's a first come, first serve, this is one of my favorite hacks in one of my leagues. You can see the bids and you'll see players who didn't get awarded because the player got their, the owner, the manager got their primary guy. I was like, oh yeah, the secondary guy they wanted is somebody pretty good. I had overlooked him, and then I could snap him up for nothing. So just basically cheat, you know, but use the applied information early in the day and make better decisions as the day goes along.
Yeah, I love the idea of auditing who is dropped and marking it down or putting in an immediate waiver claim so that you don't forget. Should Nolan Jones get placed on the IL, as the rumor is? To me, I think the biggest beneficiary is Hunter Goodman, who was called up and then hasn't really been playing, because that's what the Rockies do. They call up guys who are playing well in the minors and then sit them on the bench. And so this would open up yet another outfield spot and make it even harder for the Rockies to keep Hunter Goodman on the bench. Hunter Goodman flashed power with 34 home runs across two levels last year, and only had 77 plate appearances with the Rockies, didn't hit great, was off to a really good start in AAA this year with a .298 batting average, 7 home runs, 22 RBIs, and 20 runs. It is a good offensive environment in the Rockies AAA, but again, it's a good offensive environment in Coors. So I think that Hunter Goodman is somebody who would benefit the most from this. He also cut his strikeout rate down to 21% in the early going at AAA, which is nice. The big name that people are going to go to is Jordan Beck, who was a compensatory pick in 2022 for the Rockies, was one of their top 10 overall or their organizational prospects. 23-year-old outfielder is hitting .307 with 5 home runs and 5 steals in his first 25 games at AAA. Also made major strides in his plate discipline metrics after struggling a bit in AA last year. It's the Rockies, so I can't rely on him playing. I know he's a rookie. I know he got called up. I think he goes into that Hunter Goodman role of like, hey, he's up and he'll be enticing and he'll might play sometimes. But I think Hunter Goodman benefits the most now. And I was trying to add Hunter Goodman in some waiver leagues last night in anticipation of this, even though the Rockies go on the road all week this week, which is something to keep an eye on. And we talked about back injuries can be tricky. So we don't know exactly what Nolan Jones's timetable is, or maybe if he winds up not getting placed on the IL. I mean, we did this podcast last week after the Cubs said Cody Bellinger was day to day. And then 3 hours after we recorded, they put him on the IL. And so you're like, okay, so I guess that was wrong information. Who knows?
Lots to unpack there. Men to the Rockies drive me crazy and drive everybody crazy with, look, they're not contending. Their objective this year should be to develop young talent, identify young talent, and figure out what they have and who are the cornerstones of their next playoff contending team. They are easily the worst team in right now. It's been the top heavy NL West. It's just pretty much been the Dodgers, but I mean, eventually San Diego will play well. Arizona's better than this. At least the Giants are trying, right? Colorado, you wonder what the heck they're doing because they just have such a crazy approach sometimes. They should give at-bats to Goodman. You know, Beck, his numbers at AAA speak for themselves. You should call him up and just say, okay, this guy, I mean, like look at what the Orioles did when they brought up Holiday, okay? And he didn't hit for 2 weeks. He went back down. That's fine. But they let him put him in the lineup and left him alone. They occasionally sat him against a left-handed opponent, but just let the guy play and let the guy breathe a little bit. And I don't know why the Rockies won't do that. I thought representative bids for Goodman this week. I didn't get him anywhere, but I don't know. What is it worse to win your fab? Sometimes I have that thing where it's like when I lose, everybody I lose out on fab, I assume was the right guy. And every time I win a fab bid, I'm like, oh, well, maybe I
did. I make a mistake.
I'm overrating. Yeah. I made a mistake. Like in one league, I shoved on Willie Castro, who we'll get in later, and nobody else wanted him. I'm like, really? Isn't Willie Castro pretty good? I don't think Lewis is coming back anytime soon, and he can play all over the field. But it's just one of these things where I just expect even when the Rockies have talented players, I expect them to probably mess it up. But I did try to get Goodman. I would love to see Beck get a chance to play. I know this is hard to do, and maybe in many leagues impossible. I'm at sell low. Period on Nolan Jones. I'm at take what I can get. If I could get a player who I thought was going to play relatively every day and was like maybe like a top 150, top 170, top 180 type of player, I would take that for Nolan Jones right now and just cut my losses.
Yeah, I was a believer that his called strike rate was so high, he needed to go back to what he was doing last year, swing a little bit more, be a little bit more aggressive. He started doing that and it was not successful. And again, like I'm willing to give him a pass because back injuries are a real issue with hitters. And the Rockies have said that he's been battling this for most of the year. Sometimes it locks up on him. So he's not comfortable, but that said, like back injuries are an issue and I don't think it's going to go away so quickly. We also know elbow issues, injuries are an issue. And Jesus Luzardo was put on the IL last week with left elbow tightness. He claims he's not concerned. He, who has had Tommy John surgery before, said he'd rather miss two starts than miss a year and a half. So his thought was, I'm just going to sit this one out for a little bit rather than, you know, risk a major injury. You usually say you tend to not believe the player. Where are you at on this? Are you, obviously you're holding him, right? You're not dropping him until we really find out more. If you have an IL spot, you're putting him on the IL. Are you worried about this at all?
Definitely. Well, when I say don't believe the player, by the way, it's not that I'm calling these guys liars or anything, but there's no incentive. If it is a big concern, you gain nothing by telling the world that, right? You know, we have a world where in hockey, they say upper body injury, lower body injury. You don't want to give your opponent an area to target. The NFL is full of teams who out and out lie about the injury report. I have one team, Eric, that has Luzardo. Luzardo. I'm so riddled with injuries. We only have three IL spots and I need to put out a lineup every week. I think we have twice weekly bidding in that league. I'm like, you know, I hate to do it. It's an elbow injury. He wasn't pitching well. The walk strikeout rate was all messed up. He's walking way too many guys. This is obviously a guy who's hurt. I mean, this put him on the IL, the elbow. It's a year of the elbow injury.
Right.
I said to myself, what would it take for him to get right and then pitch well, and then have me trust him again? I'm like, that's a lot of steps involved. This team's like a seventh or eighth place team, middle of the pack. It can still contend. And I'm in there trying to fix it. There's guys I wanted to pick up. I'm like, you know what? You have to cut some guys you don't want to. I cut Jesus Luzardo in that league. And I'm not opposed to it. I'm afraid this is going to be a lost season for him.
Yeah, I get that. I get that fear. I had to make that decision with a pitcher who I didn't even put on the rundown because he's been on the IL the whole season. But Gavin Williams of the Guardians had that setback.
Yeah, I cut him like a week ago. Same, I think it might be the same team, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, he had that setback on, I believe it was Thursday, where they shut him down for another week. He felt tightness in his elbow. The MRI came back clean, and to me that was almost more worrying, is like, all the imaging looks fine, but he keeps experiencing pain. And so they don't know why he keeps experiencing pain. And I was just kind of like, you know, again, this isn't an NFBC format where I'm not able to just hold him on my IL. I don't think that Gavin Williams is so elite a pitcher right now where he's at in his career that I'm willing to hold him through an elbow injury that he and the team can't figure out what's bothering him, but they're clear that it is bothering him. Because there's no timetable for that. We just don't know when that pain is going to go away. We don't know when he's going to start being able to throw, you know, ramp up again without issue. And he's been on the sidelines for so long now that, like, he needs a proper rehab assignment. Early on, it was like, well, he pitched in spring, so he won't, you know, he might need three starts in the minors. So I think you're looking at, like, 4, 5, 6 weeks at best. here. And so I got rid of Williams. I think Luzardo has more upside, so I'm willing to hold on to him until we get a little bit more of a timeline.
You make such a great point that there are so many steps to the comeback process, to the rehab starts, often multiple rehab starts. And then maybe when they come back, they're on a pitch count, or maybe they come back and they're against a team, you know, Marlins, maybe they're facing the Braves that week or something like that. By the way, how scary is it that the Braves lead the majors in runs scored and their three worst OPS plus guys right now in the lineup are Acuna, Olsen, and Riley. They're their three worst hitters right now, and they lead the major leagues in runs. It's just what a juggernaut that team is. But there are so many steps to this, and then ultimately it comes down to when are you going to trust the player. In the case of Williams, it's probably an easier cut because it comes down to upside. I know when I did cut Lazardo, I didn't like doing it, and I know there's a chance that and this nothing will sting more than in the middle of the year when he's on one of my opponent's rosters if he's pitching great. And we sure know that he's a guy in a healthy season. He could strike out 190 players. I mean, batters. Well, he's that good. But
yeah,
I can't. I decided I didn't want to wait around for it because there's just so many steps. That's the thing. And again, when they say 4 to 6, I never want you to expect the 4. And even if it's right. 6, then you get thrown the rehab time and the when do I trust them again time. And that's like another 2 or 3 weeks if it even happens. And it's so easy to have a setback. And I just don't want to play that game.
Yeah, and we'll talk about somebody later on who I had to cut, who I'm a little worried about seeing him on another team. We also had an injury to Craig Kimbrell last night. He blew a save and left with the trainer with what they first referred to as an oblique issue, and then they referred to as upper back tightness. Kimbrell says he's fine. Brandon Hyde, who is not like Scott, said, quote, "I'm inclined to believe the player." The Orioles feel like Kimbrell is fine because he says he's fine. It's nice to hear upper back and not oblique, but at the same time, you know, upper back, you're starting to get closer to like a shoulder and a lat with a pitcher, which isn't ideal. Yennier Cano would be the clear pickup here. I think he was picked up in a lot of leagues as a spec last night in case Kimbrell goes on the IL. And we'll have to see that, you know, play out over the next couple of weeks to see like the next couple of days to see what actually happens with Kimbrell.
Yeah, let me track the number on Cano right now. He is 27% rostered in Yahoo, plus 5% in the last day. So he's still widely available and, you know, his skills speak for themselves. Whip's a little bit higher than you'd like to see, but you would think he'd step in. Yeah, I'm at the point now, Eric, where it's like with Kimbrell, it's like, oh, at least it's his back. Right. At least it's not. I mean, as you said, you know, they did say oblique at first and back. It makes you wonder, you know, maybe it could be shoulder related. But I'm so petrified of forearm and elbow injuries that if somebody has to get hurt, you ideally would like it to be something really, really minor. It's a blister. It's a, you know, it's a toe injury that's really minor or a finger injury that's really minor or something like that. Something that heals and comes back and you don't worry about it. But at least the back is better than a shoulder or an elbow. I don't work for James Andrews or anything, but that's my 2 cents worth on that.
Yeah. For the same team on the Orioles, John Means is set to be coming back this week. I'm curious first if you have any interest. I mean, I think we briefly talked about this before and you and I both were kind of out on Means. It does seem like if Means comes back, it could be the end of the road for Albert Suarez, who's pitched fine, but you know, unless the Orioles go to a 6-man, I guess Cole Irvin could get the boot too. But Kyle Bradish is also coming back. So it feels like, you know, we might be nearing the end of the Albert Suarez experience here. If he pitches this week, it's going to be against either the Yankees or the Reds and you're not using him. And so you might as well just cut Albert Suarez now. But I'm curious if you're interested in picking up Means anywhere.
I mean, he had his peak. What was he? You know, a mid-3s ERA guy, a pitch to contact player. I always thought that moving the fences back in left field was like a direct move to try to combat, you know, the home run gopheritis problem. You know, he allowed 30 home runs back in 2021. It seemed like a move to try to satiate John Means, and all he's done has been hurt since then. But he's okay. It's funny that Irvin may get bounced because I just think Means is just a slightly better version of Cole Irvin.
I agree.
Right? I don't dislike – I wish the Orioles – you know, I hope they can – I know there isn't a tree where great pitchers fall from that you can just trade for. You know, they went out and they obviously got Burns to be their number one. I would be so in love with this team if they had just a really solid, he doesn't have to be as good as Burns, but just somebody who's unquestionably like the number two or even number three starter in a playoff series. And who maybe Bradish will be that guy. It's hard to expect a lot with when they go the rest and rehab approach
right.
rather than surgery, but means this team has a lot of like fourth and fifth starters. And I think Means is just one of those guys.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a little more interested in two guys who are nearing a return from rehab, both Taj Bradley and Brian Wu. Mm-hmm. Brian Wu, through his second rehab start, he has yet to mix in any off-speed pitches. Now, one, Brian Wu doesn't use a lot of off-speed pitches, but he has them. And so you're looking at least one more rehab start, if not two, because he's got to mix in the breaking balls. How comfortable is he with them, et cetera. But Brian Wu is nearing a comeback. And then Taj Bradley, 2 days ago, started for AAA Durham, 5 innings, no hits, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, had a 35% whiff rate, looked really good. I stashed Taj Bradley in a couple NFBC leagues where I could. I think he gets one more rehab start, and then I think that he might be up in that rotation. So I'm curious if you're interested in stashing Wu or Bradley in your leagues.
Oh, for sure. You know, Bradley for that strikeout upside. We know anybody pitching in Seattle is interesting. I thought their entire staff made sense before the season as a potential draft target. And you're a little bit nervous that he hasn't mixed in the off-speed pitches yet. But I thought the move you made with Bradley was really smart. That's good fabbing right there. You want to get the player on your terms at your cost, and you do it a week or two early rather than.
It was a 15-team league. And I was the only one who bid on him. I went up to $29. NFBC leagues are $1,000 fab budget. I put $29, and nobody else bid. There were no backup bids, which I was a little surprised by. I understand that I think he's a couple weeks away, but I still think and he was inconsistent last year, so I get it. Like, he wasn't dominant, but you know, I think it's a solid gamble on a talented pitcher in the Rays rotation. Breaking news as we're recording, the Twins have announced they are activating Carlos Correa from the IL for the start of this week. They are sending down Austin Martin, which is interesting for a couple reasons. One, Martin had kind of started to find his footing a little bit. You know, he is a prospect of, or was a prospect of some note. And he was kind of playing all over the place, was just hitting .226 with a homer and 2 steals, but 16 runs scored in 22 games. What's interesting here, and I'm curious your thoughts on A, I assume if you have Carlos Correa, you're putting him right back into your lineup. Why would you have held on to him otherwise? However, this does, I think, impact one of the guys we were just talking about, because the guy who has been playing shortstop every day for the Twins without Correa is Willie Castro. And Willie Castro is somebody we were mentioning was a really hot pickup because he's hitting .410. Over his last 10 games with 1 home run, 5 runs, 8 RBIs, 1 steal. He stole 33 bases last year. Now, he can play everywhere, but that was his primary spot. So are you losing some interest in Willie Castro after this news, or do you think the Twins will find places to play him?
Yeah, I'm hoping they find places to play him. You look at the first week of the season where he played left field and he played third base. It's not that Castro is a great defensive player, but he's adequate at several different spots. And we know, we talked about before the season, just how many injury-prone players seem to be clustered on this team. You know, Buxton has stayed healthy so far. The Correa injury surprised nobody. Kirilov's had injury problems. Kepler's had injury problems. So it's one of these things where a lot of times, like when you see a starting pitcher who's pitching well and then guys come back, you think, well, eventually somebody will get hurt and they'll need that guy again, or maybe they'll temporarily go six-man. I'm going to hold. If you have Castro, I would want to hold and just make sure that Correa comes back healthy, or make sure somebody else doesn't get hurt, or make sure the Twins don't say, well, Castro's hitting too well to take out of the lineup. Maybe they just find a different place for him to play every day until he cools off. I'm not going to proactively drop him. You may be in situations where you have to. I'm going to try to hold on to him because he's a player, as you mentioned, he had the 30-plus steals last year. Qualifies multiple different positions, and I think they're going to keep him in the lineups. I would think this week that he'll still play 5 or 6 games.
Yeah, this week will be crucial because Jose Miranda is also hitting .292 with a .500 slugging percentage in his 50 plate appearances this year, and he's been playing primarily third base, which is where Castro was playing at the start of the year after Royce Lewis got hurt. before Correa got hurt. So there's been a lot of moving pieces. It'll be curious how they put Castro and how they use Castro and Miranda, because those are two guys that were waiver wire pickups now that Correa is back. So the Twins will be interesting to see in that regard. The Red Sox made a move over the weekend, buying, essentially, acquiring Garrett Cooper from the Cubs for cash. This is exactly what Craig Breza. This is exactly what Craig Breza was talking about when he was saying Red Sox had internal options. They weren't going to necessarily go out and sign somebody. They were waiting for the May 1st. A lot of these guys have opt-outs. A lot of veterans have opt-outs on May 1st. So they were waiting for that. Then the Cubs designated Garrett Cooper for assignment, even though Garrett Cooper's hitting 270 with one home run and six RBIs through his first 12 games. The Red Sox were interested in Cooper in the offseason, so they made a move for Cooper. This is because the details of Tristan Casas' injury came out, where he said he got into like a mini car crash, essentially was what the analogy was for his rib cage, where it's going to be 6 to 8 weeks before he can even begin conditioning and strengthening. And then he has to work through baseball activities. Then he has to get back into rehab games. That may take a while, given how long he's sidelined. We could be looking at like 2.5 months without Tristan Casas. So I cut him in NFBC formats where I have no IL. I kept him in some leagues where I have IL spots because I didn't need him immediately. So my questions to you are, A, are you cutting Casas in leagues where you don't have IL spots? And B, how interested are you in Garrett Cooper? Because I think he could just be the everyday first baseman in Boston.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to be a lost season for Casas, and I lean towards cutting him. If it's easy to hold him, that's fine. But if you're at the fork in the road, I would lean towards a cut. And it's, as a Red Sox fan, I'm depressed just to say that. Cooper's one of those guys. I never expect him to be great. But his lifetime OPS plus is 109. His OPS plus this year was 115. That 270, 341, 432 slash that he had with the Cubs, I could easily see him being that type of player, maybe a slightly lower average. I could see him being like 262, 335, 429 for the Red Sox. Certainly not Tristan Casas, but a quality regular in a good lineup, in a good park. Somebody who you'd probably have to be in 15 teamers to be interested in him. He's not good enough for 10 or 12 teamers, but he's a solid professional hitter, still young enough. It's his age 33 season that I know a lot of people are – it's easy to pick on the Red Sox. They botched the Mookie Betts trade, and they haven't been in on a lot of the free agents people wanted them to be in on. And then, of course, the guy they make the signing on a couple of years ago with Story hasn't worked out at all. But
right. Or Giolito this offseason.
Right, for sure, for sure. But I think Breslow's a smart guy, and I think mm-hmm. – And just like I thought Bloom was a smart guy, and even though they weren't doing the top of the market stuff that you want a ostensibly a big market team to do, I think they've done a pretty good job with the thrift shopping, with the things like this. This is not a signature move. You're not going to be like, oh, yeah, we made the playoffs because we got Garrett Cooper. But I think he's still capable of being at least a league average hitter, maybe slightly above that. And I think it was a good move for a team that has a need with their signature cornerman out for the role. For the foreseeable future.
And if you use the comparison of what they were throwing out there, like, listen, no knock on Bobby Dalbec as a person. Seems like he's a hard worker. Seems like he's a nice guy. Everybody who covers the team only has nice things to say about him. But it just wasn't happening. And so Garrett Cooper himself as a player, solid MLB veteran, no issues with him, no elite skills, no real terrible ones. Garrett Cooper as a substitute for Bobby Dalbec is a major upgrade in the Red Sox lineup. I mean, it just is. Like, and the Red Sox will get Vaughn Grissom back this week. And I put some bids in on Cooper. And Cooper, just this is goes back to your waiver talk before. I put some bids in on Cooper where he was a lower priority for me than other guys. So I got the guys I had above Cooper. Cooper didn't get added. I made sure I highlighted it in my sheet that I modeled after Jenny Butler. Jenny Butler is great at this stuff and sent me a lot of information on it. But I marked it so I could say, I tried to get Cooper. Nobody got him. I can get him next week. And that was something I wanted to remind myself of. And we'll see what the Red Sox do with their playing time this week. But I really do think he'll be the everyday guy. And I wanted to make sure that I I didn't forget about him.
I got to get my hands on the secret Jenny Butler spreadsheet.
It's great. Yeah, it's great.
She's a really good player. One of my competitors in labor and somebody I have a lot of respect. She plays a lot of high stakes NFBC stuff. And she's, again, excellent.
She's also, so good with the organizational aspect of it.
Yeah, she understands just, again, it's a process, right? I mean, it's about the process and not the results. If you get the process right, you'll be fine with the results at the end of the season. I also want to mention before we close the book on the Red Sox, we didn't go sit down. Rafaela got off to a horrible start, but wasn't nice. And they had that 17-0 laffer. He has a homer, a steal, seven RBIs. He goes 4-for-4. He's actually dropped in one of my thinner leagues, and I was able to add him. I still think
he's outfield shortstop eligible too. We mentioned
for sure, and he's been paid, so they're not going to jerk him around. He's going to be in the lineup.
And they need his defense at shortstop. Yes, they do. We mentioned he was going to get an opportunity unless he really face planted. And he is making good. He's not. Listen, he hasn't caught fire, but he is making minor improvements that let you know, like we said this with Casas last year, Casas until June 1st last year was fine, not great, better than Rafaela was doing, but hadn't taken off. But it clicks a little bit when you're starting to play every day.
23% rostered, so he's out
there. Yeah, he's worth getting in deeper formats for sure. Last piece of news before we get into some of the other waiver guys is Houston's calling up Joey Loperfido today. Joey Loperfido is the most talked about prospect that nobody knew about before the start of the season. And obviously people knew about Joey Loperfido before the start of the season, but common baseball players didn't. And I will say that I play in a lot of leagues, and it wasn't until the beginning of spring training where I really started to hear about Joey Loperfido, drafted him in some draft and holds based on what I was reading about him. Because he was great in Double-A last year and was not so good in his 32 games in Triple-A. So it wasn't like he was, the must-have prospect. He's hitting .287 in Triple-A this year with 13 home runs, 31 runs, 27 RBIs, and also 5 steals in 25 games. This is a guy who hit 24 home runs and stole 24 bases last year. Yes, he will strike out, but a lot of prospect writers have pointed this out. I talked with Jordan Beck. I talked with Chris Clegg, James Anderson. We had a good Twitter conversation about these guys. And the takeaway is he is doing a better job of not chasing out of the zone. He's swinging and missing a little bit more in the zone because he's trying to do damage on more pitches in the zone. He's hunting for pitches that he can really hit. So he's laying off pitches out of the zone. He's trying to really do damage on pitches that he can handle. So he is adding a little bit of swing and miss, which will always be there. But he's also, again, got 13 home runs in 25 games. So I do think he's a little better in on-base percentage and OPS leagues because he does have a 13% walk rate right now. I don't expect him to hit higher than 230, 240. But that power is real. The speed is legitimate. He's might not steal 20, but he could get 10 the rest of the way. And he's going to be playing it. He has a chance if he can hit consistently to be in a really strong Astros lineup. And so I'm trying to grab him everywhere if I'm okay with my expectation of a 230, 240 batting average.
I actually think he could even hit higher than that. The thing with Loperfido is, because it took a while for his minor league traction to gain, he's a little bit older. He's age 25 season, so he wasn't seen as a prospect. And this kind of came a little bit out of nowhere. He was what drafted, I think, was seventh round out of Duke, I want to say. He can play different positions. He's played a little bit of second base. He can play the outfield, left field, center field. He can play first base. And two guys who are absolutely crushing the Astros right now, Chaz McCormick isn't hitting, and Jose Abreu has probably been the worst hitter in baseball through 1 month. He hasn't barreled a ball all season. He's 37. I mean, that just has designated for assignment written all over it, right? Mm-hmm. So there are different places where – and the Astros also – here's another key too, okay? If the Astros were 15-9 and Abreu's not hitting or Chaz McCormick isn't hitting, we'll wait it out. They have a losing record. They're losing ground to – a good Mariners team, to a good Rangers team. Not that they're really running away from anybody either, but the Astros have a losing record. There's more urgency for them to do something. So I haven't been able to get Loperfido yet. There are some leagues where the cadence hasn't come up yet. Obviously, we have this draft tonight. I would not mind drafting him. It's a 13-team league. I think he's a lot of different paths to relevance. I think the pop's going to play. He's going to run a little bit. I don't think he's going to be like an Adam Dunn, like 215 hitter or anything like that. And I think the Astros are motivated to give him a chance. I think they need to see what they have here. So if nothing else, I think Lil Perfido coming up, I think he's going to play for the next 3 weeks. And if he hits, he's going to stick.
Yes, I agree with you. And remember, he's 24, so he's on the older side for a debuting prospect. It's not like he's like a 20, 21-year-old that the Astros might want to send back down. Like
about get turn 25 in May. Now. He's about to turn 25. So do your birthday shopping now. But
yeah, and so they need to see now if he fits. We're going to
Jose Abreu looks totally done, right?
He's done. I said that last year and he went on a run, but I still think he's done.
He was artificially inflated by that good lineup. He had all those RBIs, but he really didn't have a good season. And we're moving on. Man, he was so good for so long, and then he won the MVP in the COVID year and all that. He was the same guy every year for like 7 or 8 years. But although player development isn't always linear, player collapsing and the downside of careers often is. And I think Jose Abreu, and I say this with no joy because I had a lot of fun with Jose Abreu in the Chicago years back when the White Sox were a destination team. They haven't been that for several years. But yeah, I think this is pretty. I don't think he's going to end the season with the Astros. I don't even think he's going to make it to the All-Star break.
It would not surprise me. We're going to get to some of the other trendy waiver wire names. But before we do that, this weekend, it's the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. Don't miss the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs. Coverage begins at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time this Saturday, only on NBC and Peacock. That's the 150th Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs, 2:30 p.m. Eastern this Saturday, only on NBC and Peacock.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
So Scott, we're gonna try to go through these quickly so we can give people as many of our takes on as many of these guys as possible. One of the trendiest waiver names, a name we've been hearing for 4-ish years now, Joe Adell was picked up in a lot of leagues last night. He's hitting .435 over his last 8 games with 2 home runs, 4 runs, 7 RBI, and 1 steal over that stretch. Do you think this is finally it for Joe Adell? Were you buying in?
Post-type sleeper. There's plausible upside. I can't guarantee you it's happening, but he was so highly touted, and he came up at such a young age that he's still, he's mid-20s. Yeah, I'm interested in Joe Adell.
Yeah, agreed. I do think there'll be a little bit of regression. His strikeout rate is way down, but if you look at, he's chasing outside of the zone more. He's still making only 72% contact overall. His swinging strike rate is still 14%. So I think there'll be a little bit of regression in terms of the batting average and the strikeout rate. He's not going to hit .327, but the power and speed is real, and he's got a shot in the lineup. And so I'm taking a gamble as well. I just don't treat this as the number one overall prospect finally getting to play. He's not that guy anymore. We've had to recalibrate our expectations of who he is as a player. Going from top prospect to a prospect that not many people, probably not even a prospect, but it's Jacob Young from the Nationals, who was added everywhere for speed purposes, really. Over the last 8 games, he's hitting .480 with 8 runs, 5 RBIs, and 4 steals. He has 10 steals in just 20 games this year. Were you buying in on Jacob Young?
It's funny. I picked him up a couple of weeks ago, and he didn't play enough for me to hold on to him. Washington's one of those teams, one of those YOLO teams that's just running like crazy. It's really the only thing they have to hang their hat on at the moment, although Jesse Winker's been a nice surprise. You have to be – he's basically a speed or bust guy. He's going to bat ninth all season, mm-hmm. and I'm not convinced he's going to hit long-term. So you think of like what you thought Estuary Ruiz was when he plays. This is kind of who Young reminds me of.
Fully agree. I think he's a really great speed play. I think his batting average will be solid. He's going to hit ninth in a bad lineup. And so I don't expect tons of value there. Though we say bad lineup, but you and I have said there's value in the Nationals before, and he's one of those guys. So Adam, you got another producer, Adam. You've got another Nationals player to root for. Mike Tauchman, I had it.
The Nationals are one game under 500. They haven't been
there. They're feisty. Good. I mean, they're not. Listen, we know who's bad now. It's not the Nationals. They don't belong.
There
in the
you
conversation.
Go. Well said. We know who the punching bags are. The Nationals are not a punching bag. I'm having a ball with Mackenzie Gore this year, and
not only are the Nationals not a punching bag, but they have legitimate prospects we're interested in, which like. I'm not going to go and say that they're like the next version of the Orioles, but they could be an interesting team as early as next year. Like if these hitters, you know, Cruz and Wood and these kind of guys, if they come up later in the year and produce, like the Nationals could be interesting.
I also think that they might go to market with Kyle Finnegan, like when he has 18 saves at the All-Star break.
Get rid of him.
And then Hunter Harvey, who's been lights. I mean, Finnegan's been good too, but Hunter Harvey is just screaming.
Right. Every Finnegan save is dancing and through raindrops right now.
For sure.
Just try not to get hit. It's brutal. I added Mike Tauchman in a lot of leagues last night. He's hitting .387 over the last 10 games with 3 home runs, 7 runs, 8 RBIs, 1 steal. He's batted second in every game since Cody Bellinger has gone on the IL. It seems like with Bellinger out, Tauchman will be playing every day and hitting at the top of the lineup. He's an elite plate discipline guy, really always has been. He spiked a high strikeout rate in 2021, but that's never him. He has a 19% strikeout rate and an 18% walk rate in 24 games this year. You've talked about how you like players like that. I don't know if he keeps up this level, but I think he should be added in most formats while he's playing this well and hitting in that spot in this lineup.
Yeah, the OBP skills jump off the page. He reminds me a little bit of Robbie Grossman, like the good part of Robbie Grossman, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, and the OBP justifies good lineup real estate in an offense we want to invest in. I'll co-sign Tauchman.
Yeah. What are you doing with Pete Crow Armstrong? Because a lot of people picked him up also over the weekend because he was called up and is starting – regularly in center field for the Cubs with Tauchman shifting to right field. Again, this is with Bellinger and Seiya Suzuki both out. But Pete Crow Armstrong was hitting .203 at AAA with a 29% strikeout rate and just a 3% walk rate. I understand that, you know, he hit a homer and is 5 for his first 13 at the major league level, but like I'm just not buying into this. I think he's an elite defensive center fielder who's not going to hit enough at the major league level.
I think that's entirely what his career is going to be. I know he's only 22, so it may seem a little false to be putting this gavel down, but it's one thing to hit .203, but when you have 3 walks and 24 strikeouts, I'm not going to make any excuses for you. I did not even think about, even when I was desperate for playing time or at bats, I did not make any bids on Crow Armstrong.
Mm-hmm. And now he will run. He has speed. He will run. So there's some potential value there if he gets on base enough. I just don't trust he's going to get on base enough. I'm shocked that Andy Páez is only rostered in 23% of Yahoo leagues. I was able to get him in another NFBC league last night because he wasn't picked up the weekend before. This is a guy who's starting essentially every game since he's been up for the Dodgers. He's hitting .302 in those 11 games with 2 home runs, 10 runs scored, 5 RBIs. He has no walks yet. And a 21% strikeout rate is not bad. know that also he walked a lot in the minor leagues. I think his lack of walks is a result of the fact that MLB pitchers are just like, let's see if you can hit this. And so they're not trying to get him to chase out of the zone, and he's not. They're coming into the zone and challenging him, and he's making contact. And I don't know if you're as surprised as I am that he's not rostered in more formats.
Yeah, any, you know, any way into the LAD lineup is good to me. And as you said, he had good plate discipline and good OBP skills in the minors. It just, it's been a matter of him being challenged his first time around. But it's not, don't, this walk strikeout rate is misleading you into, it's not the player he is. I mean, his minor league profile will tell you something totally different. He should, his roster tag should be twice as high when we talk next week.
I hope so. I mean, I'm trying to, I wrote about him in my Sunday waiver piece. I think he needs to be, he should get over that 50% mark pretty quickly, hopefully. Another duo of players, we're going to switch to the pitching side, but duo of pitchers that were picked up a lot. Jason Adam for the Rays, where available. Garrett Clevenger also picked up for the Rays, and it's because Pete Fairbanks late last week was placed on the IL with a nerve issue. The Rays over the weekend updated and said that basically everything has checked out fine with him. There's no like additional injuries. There's no ligament. There's no anything like that. But there's still no set timeline for Fairbanks because they don't, just don't know how this nerve issue, how he's going to respond, how his grip is going to be, what he's going to be able to kind of like command his pitches in the way that he normally does. Clevenger is the main lefty now in the bullpen with Colin Poche on the IL, and Jason Adam is the main righty. I'm still holding Fairbanks everywhere because we don't have any information in terms of how long this will last. I don't love that it's a nerve issue. And I was trying to get Adam wherever I could. And I had some minor bids on Clevenger because I do think the Rays will mix and match, but I wasn't going crazy. I'm curious if that's kind of how you're handling the situation as well.
Yeah, Adam has more goodwill here. He's the right-hander, and he's got better control. So even though this screams out Tampa Bay is going to distribute, you get a save, and you get a save, and you get a save, the overwhelming favorite to be the chairperson of this committee would be Adam. He's the overwhelming play. And I just worry. I see Clevenger with 9 walks in 11 innings, and it makes me very nervous.
Yeah. Yes, I think that when Poche comes back, we don't know when that'll be, but then I think Clevenger gets moved out of that spot a little bit. Trevor McGill of the Brewers was also picked up in a lot of places because he got a save last week. I mentioned that he was actually pitching high leverage. We've talked about him a bunch on the show. I mentioned he was pitching high leverage innings. To me, he's the guy to roster in that bullpen, but I would also roster Joel Piamps because I think the Brewers are mixing and matching. However, to me, it's those two guys. And I think those two guys are going to be the ones who get saves. Abner Uribe is done. He's not looking particularly good, and he's not pitching late in games now. So I think McGill and Piamps both should be rostered until Devin Williams is back.
For sure. And for a surprising Milwaukee team that's 17-10. So maybe there's more, say, I mean, granted, as long as you're not horrible, like a 50-win Chicago White Sox team, there's, and they can't even pick up one closer for crying out loud. They're spreading their saves around and they never even win games. But yeah, two guys, this is like fantasy football where if two backs get most of the touches, you can live with that. If they're going to, now that Uribe has dealt himself out of this hand and it's going to be these two main guys, I think both Piamps and McGill make sense even in medium-sized mixed leagues.
Well, I'll give you another situation that now might have two guys, and it's the Chicago White Sox. Jordan Leisure got his first save of the season this weekend. He was a trendy name in the spring. He had looked really good. He then got hurt, and they were, you know, then they moved Kopech to the bullpen, and Kopech kind of took off a little bit. Jordan Leisure has thrown 11 and a third innings this year, allowed just 9 hits, 2 runs. He's only struck out 7, and he's walked 5. But again, this is a guy who had a 39% strikeout rate in AA last year and a 35% strikeout rate in AAA. So I do believe the strikeouts will come. They're not currently there. I'm curious your interest in Leisure. I don't think that Kopech is fully like done. I know he's been inconsistent. Remember, this is his first year throwing out of the bullpen. And so some guys figure out how to do that quicker and better than others, like Mason Miller did. I still think Kopech profiles as a solid reliever, but I don't know that he has to be rostered now. in the same way that I don't know that Jordan Leisure has to be rostered. This is a terrible team that might be splitting their saves between two guys.
If you had to put a chip on anybody, Kopech's strikeout rate, 22 strikeouts in 14 the third innings is certainly where I would prefer to go. But this team could win 50 games. This team could win 47. I think that's in play. I think they're that horrible. Well, they've been shut out like 7 or 8 times already. Mm-hmm. You're not getting any saves when your offense scores no runs. They have almost nobody I want to pick up on their offense either. And we talk about you got to be open-minded with the lesser teams and stuff, but this team just depresses me. And they're not – I don't think they're going to dedicate all of their saves or most of their saves to one guy. So I can't take – I would – if you had to have any of them, if you said, well, I need saves really badly, what should I do? Well, I'd say, well, at least Kopech will get you strikeouts, and I still think he's the quote-unquote main guy here. But I'm – What's the over-under here for wins? Like 51? If I said 51 wins for the White Sox, what would you say?
I wish I had taken – I wouldn't bet you because that's how concerned I am. I would probably say over, but I'm not convinced.
Tell me we pounded this before the season because I don't think we talked about the White Sox at all. I don't think we talked about them really at all, did we?
I don't know. We knew they were going to be bad. Yeah. I didn't know they were going to be this bad, and I don't know that I bet the under, and I should have, and I'm sad now.
Are they easily the worst team in – I mean, they're worse than Oakland, worse than Colorado, right? I mean, they've separated themselves in my mind. Would you agree with that? Miami?
I would agree. Okay. For sure. Miami and the White Sox for me are totally separate. And then Oakland is on the periphery there, but I kind of think they're a little more interesting than the White Sox.
And nothing's gone right for them. You know, their only player in the top 300, I think, in 5x5 value on offense is Brent Rooker, who's like hitting 215 with 5 home runs. I mean, you know, Geloff got hurt and – They put different lineups out. It's that whole situation with the ballpark and the city getting screwed over. It just makes me sad.
We're getting a note that on our betting episode, Von Dalzell, our betting expert over at NBC Sports, did actually mention he had a ticket on the White Sox to have the worst record in MLB. It was +350 at the time of our recording of that preview betting episode. So hopefully some of you out there listen to Vaughn and bet that +350 for the White Sox to have the worst record in the MLB.
Yeah, V Money Sports on Twitter, if I have that correct. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, definitely worth a follow. A major pitching pickup, just because, again, he's a young guy who was a prospect at one point in time, was Simeon Woods Richardson of the Twins. I did pick him up in a couple places because he faces the White Sox this week. And so I'm not sold on Simeon Wood Richardson as like he's going to be somebody I really want. But I'm writing him up for my Mixing It Up column on Wednesday. I looked at the pitch mix. He's made a change to his fastball that it was like a cut fastball kind of last year. He's now throwing more of a traditional four-seam fastball up in the zone. He's throwing it more at 95 plus this year as opposed to 93 last year when it had more cut. It has been a solid pitch for him so far in his two big league starts. I don't think there's enough there. I don't love the secondaries. Nothing else really grades out fully well. His changeup is the only other above average pitch. But I'm happy to pick him up to start against the White Sox because the Twins are looking better of late, and the White Sox, as we mentioned, look terrible. And maybe I'll get, you know, a solid 5 or 6 inning outing here and a win, and then I'm happy to go on my way. But in deeper formats, I did pick him up in AL Tout because, again, it's an AL-only format. And I believe that Simeon Woods Richardson has a chance to stick in this rotation now that Louis Varland is out. So I think there's some potential value there.
Yeah, it's more hit it and quit it for me, but I would pitch anybody against the White Sox.
Yes. Are you interested in like an AL-only or like a deep dynasty, things like that, where like, you know, the best option on the waiver wire is, you know, Ross Stripling or Alex Wood or guys like that?
Oh, for sure. There, you're just looking for some plausible upside. Although I talked about NL Tout, what I'm trying to figure out right now is if I want to try to play the lesser starter game or if I'm just going to keep filtering in relievers. And now relievers can get hit too. And when a reliever gets hit, it's like 4 runs and your ERA just, you know, collapses from that. I don't want to act like that never happens, but I'm debating every week, like, okay, do I just want this nameless, faceless, I don't know much about this guy, but he's got 2 walks and 13 strikeouts in relief, or do I want to try to attack some good matchups in streaming situations? These are the questions, and I don't know if there's it depends, and I know it's not a satisfying answer, but those are questions I'm asking myself every week. But at least with Woods Richardson, you get the White Sox this week, and then assuming no rainouts, he might be in line for two starts the next week, which mm-hmm. you know is always interesting. Seattle is a fairly safe landing, and even at Toronto isn't what it used to be. The park hasn't played for offense, and I don't really know that that team is just a little perennial disappointment to me. It's not like they're bad, but I thought they were going to be like what the Orioles are right now, and they're not, and I'm not really sure why.
Yeah. It's not been great there. Another pitcher that has been picked up, as you mentioned, two-star pitchers have value, is Jameson Taillon, who faces the Mets this week, the early part of this week, and then the Brewers the second part of this week. Since coming off the IL, Taillon has allowed just two runs in 10 and two-thirds innings, giving up 10 hits, striking out 8, and walking 2. He faced the Marlins and the Astros. I mentioned that Taillon was somebody I liked as a deeper format starting pitcher. Somebody who I think you could shuffle on and off your roster in a 12 team, somebody that I think remains on your roster in a 15. I liked the pitch mix changes he made last year. They started to crystallize a little bit in the second half of the year. Again, we talked about the Cubs are a solid team. So I like picking up Taillon, especially for a two-start week. And I think that he's somebody who could have value for most of the season in deeper formats.
You like him more than I do. I loved him when he came up with the Pirates, and he never quite missed enough bat. The strikeout rate never got over one per batter per inning, which is kind of what you need. It's kind of a starting point now in today's swing and miss world. He has excellent control. He's reasonable with home runs. You look at his career, ERA barely under 4. That's kind of to me what you should expect, is that he's a two-start guy. He's a matchup guy. I would certainly not, the 5 or 6 offenses that scare you, I would want him nowhere near those teams. But
yes, agreed.
In the medium and deeper leagues, he's a fringy guy. The problem with guys like Taillon is that inevitably you're going to start him in the wrong start, and you're going to have on your bench for a good start. It's going to be hard to know when to trust him, and he's not maybe good enough to just set and forget. So I'm on the fence with him. And I feel sad saying that, because 10 years ago or 8 years ago, I guess he came up in 2016, I thought he was going to be a star. And he obviously ended up just being kind of more of a journeyman. He's bounced around. I think he had at least one Tommy John, but I thought at one point he was going to be like a Cy Young contender. He never really developed into that.
Yeah, agreed. I know he never developed in that regard as a prospect. I do still think there's some value for deeper formats. So I still would, as you mentioned, I'm a little more bullish on him than you are. 3 2-start pitchers were picked up in a lot of leagues that do weekly lineup locks like the NFBC because of their two starts. I'll just throw the names out there, and I'm curious if you were at all interested in these 3 guys for this week, or even with 2 starts, you're just like, heck no. Bailey Falter of the Pirates, because he faces Oakland and then Colorado at home, so he does not go to Coors. Then Steven Matz of the Cardinals, who faces the Tigers and the aforementioned Chicago White Sox. And then Ryan Feltner of the Rockies, with the Rockies on the road all week at Milwaukee and at Pittsburgh. Were you interested in any of those 3?
Yeah, Falter, because he goes to Oakland and he gets Colorado. It's a dream matchup. You know, Matz has that ugly walk strikeout rate. And as my friend Joe Sheehan has pointed out, the Cardinals defense has gotten a lot worse in the last couple of years, kind of quietly. It wasn't that long ago they had the 5 gold gloves on the same team. It's not the same defense. I've fallen for Steven Matz before. I think I'm going to be the last guy who gets back on that bandwagon. I did go after Falter proactively and landed him in a few places, and I expect at least one win and probably like 11 or 12 good innings this week.
Yeah, I actually went after all 3 of them to varying degrees. I went after Falter, and I didn't get him in a lot of places because I didn't want to go crazy with my bids. I did get Matz in some places. I, like you, I'm not like back in on Steven Matz. However, I don't mind. I mean, the one start against the White Sox to me is a home run. And then I think the Tigers are a fine offense, but like a lot of the Tigers hitters that worry me or that are strong are left-handed. And so I kind of think that neutralizes Matz, or that neutralizes some of the impact against Matz in a way that makes Matz interesting to me. And then Ryan Feltner, again, like this is a guy with a 15% swinging strike rate right now. His xFIP and his Sierra are way better than his ERA. I don't like the team, but he's not pitching in Coors, and he gets to face Miami, which is a pretty solid matchup. And then Pittsburgh is not a, it's, you know, not a great matchup, but not a bad matchup. And so I got Feltner in some 15-team leagues. We're talking deeper formats where I put a small bid on, and I thought, you know, there's a solid two-start option there. I also like Jake Irvin of the Nationals in a two-start this week. He's struggled against the Phillies and the Dodgers this year, but like, what are you going to do? What do you expect? I think he's pitched well in one start against the Dodgers. He looked good, and he had some good other starts. He gets Miami this week, and then he gets Toronto. And we've talked about how that Toronto offense is no longer a matchup I think you need to run from. You're not attacking it, but it's not, you don't want to run from it.
You know, you can't play Patrick Corbin, of course, but I'm actually interested in everything else in the Washington rotation right now. As we talked about, they have that look of like a plucky 79 and 83 team. I think that's what they're going to be. And certainly Irvin with two reasonable matchups, Miami the better of the two. But I he's in my circle of trust this week.
Yep, agreed. We're going to just talk about a couple final guys at the very end. But before we do that, this Sunday, Liverpool and Tottenham face off in a must-win match as time is running out on the Premier League season. Can the Reds keep pace atop the table? Can the Spurs make a late push into the top four? Find out at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, exclusively on Peacock.
Don't just ride the index. Seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I told you we'd end with some guys who are under-rostered but have been producing all year and could still be had on the waiver wires. And so I want to talk first about Brenton Doyle, who's actually still under 20% rostered on Yahoo. This is a Rockies outfielder who's hitting .323 with three home runs, 18 runs scored, and four steals. He stole 22 bases last year, 10 home runs. The batting average and the plate discipline has gotten much better. Are you buying in on Brenton Doyle? Should he be added in more leagues?
Oh, God, yes. I mean, he's got some power. He's got some speed percolating to the top of the lineup, of a really weak lineup. You know, he's not getting a lot of help from his teammates, but I'm shocked when I saw his roster tag. I'm shocked that he's still a discussion. He should be well over 50%.
Fully agree. Listen, his BABIP is over 400. That batting average is going to come down, but he was a .203 hitter last year. Like I mentioned in my ad drop that I do on the NBC Sports YouTube page, if he hits .260 this year, he has value for you because he's going to steal over 20 bases. He's hitting near the top of the order now, and so he's going to get more runs scored. He has the power to hit 10-plus home runs. So if you get a guy who has 10 homers, 20 steals, and a .260 batting average while playing every day because he has gold glove defense, like that has value.
He's like a poor man's version of Anthony Volpe.
Sure.
Plus defense, got very some category poor juice. We don't know what the average is going to be. He's going to move up in the lineup.
Agreed. I agree with all of that stuff.
Certainly not the upside of Volpe. Volpe's going to be a star. Yes. But so don't misunderstand that part of it. But please correct that roster tag because he should be rostered in twice as many leagues as he is right now.
Agreed. We have corrected the roster tag a little bit on Red Sox outfielder Willier Abreu, but it's still hovering around 50%. I thought it'd be a little bit higher considering – in his 23 games this year, he's hitting .292 with two home runs, 13 runs, 11 RBIs, and four steals. He is playing every day for the Red Sox against right-handed pitching, and he's hitting cleanup. He has hit cleanup every game for the last week. I think that is going to be his spot now. So he's going to be a cleanup hitter in a lineup that still has Jaron Duran and Devers and Tyler O'Neill, and will get Vaughn Grissom and Garrett Cooper. Like, it is an above average, slightly above average lineup. And this guy has looked good. And he had the power and speed in the minor leagues too. I think he should be rostered in way more leagues.
Totally co-sign. And remember that Fenway Park is not only just a fantastic place to hit, but it's a fantastic place for left-handed batters to hit. You know, Ted Williams, Fred Lynn, David Ortiz, on and on it goes. Great park for him. And it's a league heavy with platoons right now. So if you're in the strong side of a platoon, that's not necessarily a kill shot if the other check marks line up.
Agreed. We're going to move to pitching real quick. Two pitchers who have been really strong this year that are not rostered in a lot of places. Eric Fetty. People are not buying in on Eric Fetty. As of yesterday, he was 21% rostered in Yahoo formats. This is a guy who through 34 and two-thirds innings has allowed just 10 earned runs on 28 hits with 39 strikeouts and just 9 walks. That's a 260 ERA. That's a 107 whip. We talked about how he changed his pitch mix in Korea. His sweeper has changed as this year has gone on. He's adding more sweep to it as he continues to get comfortable. He's missing lots of bats. Like, he might wind up being what – I'm not fully out on Garrett Crochet, by the way. He deserves to be held in most leagues. But Eric Fetty might be what everybody was like, oh, well, Garrett Crochet is going to get strikeouts and give you good starts on a bad team, and so he should be rostered. It's like, that is Eric Fetty. That's what he's doing. He's putting together good starts, getting you strikeouts on a bad team, and so the wins won't be frequent. But I think he deserves to be rostered in, well, many more leagues.
Yeah, the walk strikeout rate points to that. Even though the ERA isn't real, his FIP is over 4, but anybody with that walk strikeout rate is worth a pickup, even on a bad Chicago team.
And his best two starts have been his last two starts as we've seen that sweeper change. So again, we're connecting results to process. The sweeper is changing a little bit, and that is allowing him to get more swings and misses and more strikeouts. And that, I do think, increases.
We've seen this before too, where a player leaves America, right? And he goes overseas, yes, and he comes back and he totally has reinvented himself. This is not the first time this story has been played.
No. Merrill Kelly. Perfect example in the same exact league. Last guy we're going to talk about today is Keaton Wynn of the Giants. He is also still rostered in far too few leagues. It's under 30% on Yahoo. Over 34 innings this year, he's allowed 12 earned runs on 23 hits, 28 strikeouts to 10 walks. That's a 3.18 ERA and a 0.97 whip. Keaton Wynn is somebody who, you know, on a solid Giants team in a good pitcher's park, is somebody who has really kind of followed that Kevin Gausman route of like really leaning into the splitter and four seam. And then he's throwing a slider more this year than he did last year. That slider is missing bats with a 17% swinging strike rate. So I'm really happy to see the evolution of the arsenal from Keaton Wynn. And he's somebody who, like, I think he's who people wanted Kyle Harrison to be. Like, everybody was like, oh, Kyle Harrison is the good young pitcher on the Giants who you should keep on all of your rosters because he's going to be, like, you know, a really useful starting pitcher who might not be great, but he'll be consistently good. I think that's Keaton Wynn. I'd much rather have Keaton Wynn than Kyle Harrison. Kyle Harrison is rostered in more than double leagues that Keaton Wynn is. I'm flip-flopping that.
Wynn also has that heavy ground ball rate, and so you get to watch, you know, Matt Chapman gobble up ground balls and throw people out. It's relaxing. It's a big park when the ball does go in the air, but all the dots connect. I think the market is a week or two late on Keaton Wynn.
Agreed. Get on it now. We're going to head out of here now. As always, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Scott at Scott_Pianowski. You can follow me at SamskyNYC. We'll be back on Wednesday to break down the Yahoo Friends and Family draft that we are doing tonight. And we'll talk about some guys who it's time to jettison and some guys who maybe it's time to sell high on. So check that out on Wednesday's episode of the Roto-World Baseball Show.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics. and managing it as one big juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.